Well, hello everybody and welcome. Welcome to Essex Church and to this, our gathered community of Kensington Unitarians. How are we all this morning, I wonder? Cheery? Yes. Bleary? Yes. My spirit's full of energy today, but my voice, you may have noticed, is distinctly feeble. I've got over a bug and it's left my voice all croaky. So apologies in advance for reduced sound quality, and hopefully our message that you are welcome here will still come across loud and clear. Let's take a moment to let that sink in. The idea that we are okay just as we are. That we don't need to put on appearances. That we are indeed expected to make mistakes from time to time. We can take off any masks that we might wear. Forget even the need to keep ourselves presentable. What if we could just be and then allow one another that precious gift of acceptance too? Doing our best to understand one another's sensitivities, life stories, and points of view. Knowing that on some very deep, fundamental level, we're loved for who we are and what we bring. Accepted for the unique being that we are, with our gifts and our foibles, our strengths and our stumbling blocks. Let's breathe that in and imagine ours as a circle of acceptance. Acceptance for all that it means to be human. And our chalice flame is lit, connecting us with Unitarian and Unitarian Universalist communities the world over, all sharing our concern for equality, for the inherent worth and dignity of every person, for a person's freedom to choose who they love and how they express their identity in the world. These are values worth standing up for. I call on my biblical voice to speak for me now.
This is an opportunity not to be missed. This is the parable of the sower from Matthew. That same day, Jesus went out of the house and sat by the lake. Such large crowds gathered around him that he got into a boat and sat in it, while all the people stood on the shore. Then he told them many things in parables, saying, "A farmer went out to sow his seed. As he was scattering the seed, some fell along the path, and the birds came and ate it up. Some fell on rocky places, where it did not have much soil. It sprang up quickly, because the soil was shallow. But when the sun came, the plants were scorched and they withered because they'd no root. Other seed fell among thorns, which grew up and choked the plants. Still, other seed fell on good soil, where it produced a crop, 100, 60, or 30 times what was sown." Matthew's gospel goes on to explain. Listen then to what the parable of the sower means. When anyone hears the message about the kingdom and does not understand it, the evil one comes and snatches away what was sown in their heart. This is the seed sown along the path. The seed falling on rocky ground refers to someone who hears the word and once receives it with joy. But since they've no root, they last only a short time. When trouble or persecution comes because of the word, they quickly fall away. The seed falling among the thorns refers to someone who hears the word, but the worries of this life and the deceitfulness of wealth choke the word, making it unfruitful. But the seed falling on good soil refers to someone who hears the word and understands it. This is the one who produces a crop, yielding 100, 60, or 30 times what was sown.
Thank you, Harold. And the few words I'm going to say about this now are really from Jen Hazel, who says she's sorry she can't be with us today. It's the start of her postgraduate studies. But I heard her recently talk about this parable and say how she'd always loathed it, and how she finds it troubling, both from the point of view of the seed and from the point of view of the soil, because there's a certain feeling of helplessness about the whole caboodle, isn't there? Seeds falling on rocky soil, too bad, doomed. Not only does the seed lose out, but the soil loses out on being able to have a wonderful plant growing in it. It sounds like there's no room for change in any of it. And she went on to say, imagine the gardener's question time team being asked about seeds not growing in certain conditions. And of course, what would they say? Well, you've got to have certain conditions for a seed to flourish. Then they'd probably rattle on about all the things needed to help seeds along their way in life. And then they'd probably go on to suggest all the things that could grow in a particular sort of soil that didn't suit that kind of seed. And then they'd give a whole host of tips for how to get some life growing in what would normally seem like barren soil. So she spoke of the parable of the sower being a bit of a message of doom, and how she much preferred the kind of theology you get from Unitarians with our first principle of the inherent worth and dignity of every person, no exceptions. So she encourages us to interpret that story differently. And instead of saying, this is barren, this is fertile, she suggests that we lean in to both places, find the worth and dignity in all circumstances. The problem then isn't the soil or the seed, because we're called to all kinds of soil and all kinds of seeds. And you can't change or cultivate something into something it's not, really. No, let's learn and respond from it to see what kind of life thrives best. And she then went on to talk about the permaculture movement. So there's lots more to explore in that. This is the kind of growing I'd like us as Unitarians to engage with. No blame, plenty of encouragement, paying attention to the seed and the soil and the farmer too, all working together. And that is the new version of the parable of the sower. And I think the children's group are going to move downstairs. Feel free to go whenever you want, or go and come back, whatever works for you. And we're going to move into a time of prayer and reflection. Let's gather in now. Let's turn to the God of our hearts and our understanding, aligning ourselves with what we hold to be of ultimate worth, seeking in this quiet time a guiding spirit to be with us here and now. Life's not easy always, is it? Surprise, surprise. But is there some gratitude that we can feel now for the lives we have? Let's find, if we can, this morning, something that we can give thanks for. And if we are aware of our humanness, we're probably aware of our own self-focus. And along with that, some of our own stuck places, stuck in certain ways of being or thinking that perhaps don't serve us or the world well. If we are human, we'll perhaps be aware of our own meanness in thought and spirit towards others from time to time. And we're also aware of our great care for our wider world. Yes, at times most of us will know despair, and yet we nurture resilient hope. We notice small signs of growth of possibility. We notice love and compassion in action. So let's take a few moments of stillness now to make time to think of others, perhaps those we hear of only in the news, perhaps those important to us in our own lives. May our care guide our actions, and may we work together to create a world where love and compassion have some chance to flourish. Amen.
This is a piece by George Bernard Shaw, and you can hear the cadences of it. I won't go into Irish, but that's what it is. It's a grandiloquent Bernard Shaw spouting. This is the true joy in life, the being used for a purpose recognized by yourself as a mighty one. The being a force of nature instead of a feverish, selfish little clod of ailments and grievances, complaining that the world will not devote itself to making you happy. I am of the opinion that my life belongs to the whole community, and as long as I live, it is my privilege to do for it whatever I can. I want to be thoroughly used up when I die. For the harder I work, the more I live. I rejoice in life for its own sake. Life is no brief candle for me. It is a sort of splendid torch which I have got hold of for the moment, and I want to make it burn as brightly as possible before handing it on to future generations.
So let's take that idea now into our time of meditation. You might want to get yourselves comfy, put down anything you don't want to hold on to. I'm going to invite you to think about this idea of the lights that we each shine. We know how different we are, don't we? We know about our different gifts that we bring to the world. I think of those gifts as the light that we each shine. Going to in a few moments hear some music, Vaughan Williams's Infinite Shining Heaven, and that will lead into a good few minutes of silence held together, which will come to an end with a chime from our bell. Just allow the gentle rhythm of your breathing now to help you turn inwards. There's always the noises outside on the street, the noises in the room, but we are able to turn inwards. So let our busy minds perhaps settle for a while. And keep returning to this idea that there is something unique in you, and it's all right to be you or me or whoever we are, and we are not the same as anyone else. There is no point in our comparing of ourselves, but there is some point in finding our unique gift and sharing that with the world. So I ask you, what is the light that you bring to the world? It makes me shudder, that word, missionary. Does it you? It's unfair, I know. The truth is that much positive work the world over has been done by missionaries over many centuries. Many life-saving projects have been run by missionaries to this day. But we're also aware, aren't we, of the dreadful damage that's been inflicted on so many indigenous peoples when Western religious groups sent missionaries to save their souls. That's worthy of shuddering, I think. The connections between religion and colonialism do not show our species in a positive light, do they? European rulers sought new lands rich with resources to boost their economic status back at home, and religious leaders helped to subjugate the people who lived in those lands, attempting to destroy their faith, their way of life, and their very connection with the land on which they lived. It's a truly shameful part of our history, and its reverberances live on to this day in world politics and world injustice. So, bearing all that in mind, excuse me as I share a few positive stories of Unitarian missionary work. This is not a look at us, we're better than the rest of them kind of story, because in truth, many of our current Unitarian resources stem from wealth built on the slave trade and on colonialism, just like about everything else in this country. But in the Victorian era, our Unitarian forebears did engage in some really positive missionary activity right here in England. And their stories are part of our faith heritage, and I'd like to share them with you. And then let's see if their work can guide some of our activities now. So we're going to be hearing about two missions and one man, the domestic mission, the van mission, and the Reverend Robert Spears. If you have a look at today's order of service, you'll see a photo of the van mission. These vans were taken around the country. Outdoor services were held, giving people the message of Unitarian Christianity, a loving faith that accepted all and that emphasized people's potential for good rather than any inherent sinfulness. A faith that encouraged people to engage actively in their own faith journey through education, learning to read, studying Bible texts. I'm really grateful to the Reverend Dr. David Steers, a minister in Northern Ireland. He's got a great blog, if you like history. And because of that, I found this description of the van mission's work in the early 20th century. This came from an incredibly positive publication called The Christian Life. It was really very full of good Unitarian news. So this is what it said about the van mission. The mission has now held over 3,000 meetings. It's gathered 950,000 people, reached half as many more in one way or another, and indirectly had to do with the holdings of hundreds of outdoor meetings, chiefly conducted by ministers who are familiar with van methods. We have distributed 1.5 million pamphlets and leaflets. We've sold hundreds of books. We've kept in touch with correspondents all over the land. We've maintained a free lending library. We've found out lonely Unitarians. We've added members to the churches. We've tested likely and unlikely seed plots for district societies. It's also so exciting, doesn't it? Now, don't be put off by the serious faces in this photo of the van mission. Remember that in those days you had to stand very still for a good few seconds to have a photo taken, so you weren't allowed to smile. And would you also have a really careful look at the background to this photo? Because historians are still trying to trace the town in which this photo was taken. And if you get really interested in this, I'll tell you later of places that have already been queried and ruled out. What's known as the domestic mission, that came earlier in the 1850s, it was a Unitarian response to the social problems of their day. It's really interesting to realise that despite that image of Victorian England as a deeply religious society, the 1851 census showed that only about half of the population attended church regularly, even in those days. So the Unitarian domestic mission took faith to people in their homes and their workplaces. And rather than focusing on matters of belief, they focused on the practicalities, helping to improve living conditions, paying attention to hygiene, providing places to wash clothes and bodies, improving access to education, and encouraging saving schemes to help people when working hours were unexpectedly cut. Unitarians established reading rooms. They offered educational opportunities to adults as well as children. This is the kind of missionary work that I like. Now, it's not saying that our faith is true and that we want to save your soul by making you believe what we believe. No, it's a totally different message, isn't it? It's a message that reminds us our world is an unfair world. Basic resources of life are not distributed justly. We recognise that some people have more and some people have less. And we want to share resources more fairly with you. We want everyone to have access to the tools that they need for growing human potential. And we want everyone to have that metaphorical good soil in which to put down strong roots and grow healthy plants. And that's the message that guided the work of the Reverend Robert Spears, a Victorian character, if ever there was one. A Unitarian historian, Alan Ruston, rightly describes him as a 19th century Unitarian dynamo. And I recommend Alan's chapter on Robert Spears in his book, A Unitarian Historical Miscellany. There's a copy in the library, or you can borrow mine. A few weeks ago, four of us, Kensington Unitarians, went on an outing to the seaside, and we went to visit Southend Unitarians, who were celebrating the 40th anniversary of their new building. And on the wall, we saw a plaque remembering Robert Spears, who founded the Southend congregation. And it turned out that he founded this congregation too, or at least the Kensington element of us. I just love this quote of his on the front of the Order of Service today. I have not simply founded or recovered to life a dozen churches and established 9 Sunday schools, but I could tell how, with the help of God, I have been the means of sorrows lessened, joys heightened, of lives made more bright and pure, of hearts made more strong, homes made happier, and of gratitude expressed 1,000 times for our gospel of Unitarianism. I hope I'm going to be able to say that at the end of my working life. What really comes across when you read Spears' work is his absolute conviction that life can be improved, and that if you see a need, well, you might as well roll up your sleeves and do something about it. He, like many other Unitarians, was concerned at the poor level of education offered to girls. So what did he do? He went round asking wealthy Unitarians to give him some money, and he opened a school for girls in Highgate, Channing School, still there to this day, still with Unitarian connections. He saw the levels of poverty in parts of East London, and he set up congregations there to make a difference in people's lives, and in particular to offer educational and savings opportunities. There's lots more to tell you about Spears and his strong, biblically based faith. But what he and those who worked on domestic and van missions show us, I think, is the creative power we humans possess. When we focus on the needs of others as well as ourselves, when we see the problems of our time and we're prepared to get involved rather than back away, and when we believe that we personally can actually make a difference, and when we recognise an essential truth, that what we're doing for others, we're actually also doing for ourselves, because we are all in this together. That's the kind of missionary work worthy of us all. So what should we do? Amen. If we all clubbed together, we could buy one of those vans. I can feel inspiration coming upon me. Marianne Williamson tells us, each of us has a unique part to play in the healing of the world. In the week ahead, may each of us be reminded of the gifts we have been given. And may we use our gifts, however small, for the greater good of all. Amen. Go well and blessed be.